Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
Rupture and repair.
Since we're just after the holidays, we should definitely talk about how to repair all the ruptures that just were created in your life by spending time with loved ones and or family. They may or may not be the same people.
Home for Christmas and in therapy by New Year's.
Although I feel like this year, our clients have not needed as many supports this year. I do have to say, I'm kind of like proud of them, but at the same time, my job is dependent on them having breakdowns. Just kidding. But this year, I feel like it's, sorry, I turned off my mic. This year, I feel like I've seen a lot more regulation going on. So just stating that, well done you.
Well, and I think it's interesting because January is often a time where people get into therapy. So we see an upswing in people looking for therapists. And I think like you, Haley, for my clients who have been in therapy and been doing their work, this holiday season probably went better for them overall, and they were able to manage it. So it's the cycle of when you do start doing your work, life gets a little bit easier.
Imagine that. So, Taylor, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about the rupture and repair cycle. Mm. That's something you're very passionate about, Jen.
I love talking about rupture and repair because I think people who experience trauma are generally terrified of either rupture or repair. Mm-hmm. Right? Some people are fine with rupturing. They go around rupturing all the time and they're like burning bridges and they're like, okay, I'm done.
Got a can of gasoline and a box of matches.
Right? Well, and they feel like I'm going to leave you before you leave me. Right. And we talked about this with some of the attachment styles, and that's why we're talking about rupture and repair now. So there's that style. And I saw a lot of this with severe attachment traumas, right? Because they want to take control of the outcome by creating the rupture. And then they're afraid of the repair because they attempted this cycle. It's a natural cycle that people go through. Mm-hmm. So they attempted the cycle, but the cycle was not met with repair, healing, and harmony, and so they've abandoned the process. And then
let's back up for a sec though, and when you talk about like extreme attachment or extreme, you know, issues with that, we're not just also talking about like abusive cycles. We are definitely referring to those, but I mean, let's first, I guess, when we're talking about those extreme interactions like you're mentioning, what would constitute as that? What do you think?
Oh, well, an extreme rupture, I actually would like to start with what is a little rupture. Yeah. An extreme mm-hmm. rupture would be like a value breaking kind of experience, right? So,
So someone going against, like, if you have the value of honesty and someone out like lies to you, or you have the value of, some people have values, family and things like that, and someone who does not go in line with that, it could be a small comment. It doesn't have to be like, they are now taking over your family, right? Like, it doesn't have to be something extreme. So like what you're saying, it could be, when we're talking about little, it could be someone who's just not having that same respect for that value as you're having, right?
Right. Well, and those can feel really big because we grew up in systems where they were respected, and that was part of our system. And so if you start to recognize, for me, a rupture for me is name calling. Like, if you call me a name, and I know a lot of people call names and they think it's funny, or they think, oh, I only call my friends names. No, I'm sorry. Name calling is a rupture. I have all kinds of trauma around name calling. And so for me, it's one of those really intense things where for other people, for some reason, they've either normalized name calling in their life or they've minimized it. Mm-hmm. And they really are okay with it. And it may not feel like a rupture to them. So it's interesting.
Rupture doesn't matter about your intention. It's about how it impacts the person receiving the action. Mm-hmm. When someone's hurt, you don't get to decide that they're not hurt or that you haven't hurt them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's what a lot of people do, though, right? They decide, like, that's not a big deal. Like, why are you having such a big reaction to that? And most of the time you have to then explain to them.
Just because you didn't mean to spill the milk doesn't mean that the milk didn't spill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's what we see a lot, and especially I see it in people that are younger, but people who can't handle the idea of rupture, they'll say, oh, it was a joke. Right? Or they'll minimize someone's response versus, I'm so sorry, that wasn't my intention to hurt you, right? I'm acknowledging your rupture. Let's move into repair. So there's some people who can't acknowledge rupture, right? There's some people that rupture all the time. And then there's this other facet of people who can't acknowledge rupture and try and stay in what we call harmony all the time, or repair. And those are really superficial relationships and tend to be very shallow in their emotional depth and trust and intimacy and just all the warm fuzzies. When we can't acknowledge rupture, we don't go deeper into relationships. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, a lot of times we've talked about how one of the things we need in life is to be seen and known, right? Having our rupture seen and known is one of those things that builds intimacy and closeness.
And so I think that, because that's you being empathetic, right? Being seen and known is different than knowing how to work through it and giving guidance on that, right? And so having the rupture seen and known. And also I would say too, having the rupture seen and known, we're talking about it in regards to you and someone having an interaction, but I would also state that having it seen and known in general can often help the person who's had the rupture done to them repair it before even the relationship gets paired in a lot of different ways. You may not have the relationship itself repaired, but a person can go through their own personal repair process and healing just by able to see and know their own repair, and also have maybe someone who's outside of the relationship who had a rupture as just like a confidant, help them work through it. Because there are sometimes with rupture and repair, the other person in that issue isn't able to really interact in a healthy way. And so it's not so much that we're repairing the relationship without them, but we're saying, like, I'm repairing myself. The relationship is still going to need to be repaired, because repair counts for a couple different things. Now I'm getting kind of philosophical, but repair isn't just me and Taylor having a fight and then we're repairing the relationship. Repair is also me going through my own repair process personally of what happened and how I felt and what that meant to me. There's that repair that needs to happen with my own individual. There's also the repair with me and Taylor. So repair is really a two-pronged kind of thing. It isn't always, I will do better if me and Taylor make up. It'll also be like, I will do better for myself when I work through my own repair process, but then I'll also, like, having me and Taylor make up also helps in that scenario with the repair too.
I love that you bring that up, because a lot of times when we don't have healthy rupture and repair modeled for us in our relationships and our early attachments, we actually start to ignore our own emotions. That can lead to codependence and some of those unhealthy attachment styles that we've talked about in previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. So for example, if every time I feel a rupture, if I'm waiting for somebody else to repair it versus acknowledging my rupture to myself, I'm going to feel like my safety, my security is at the hand of somebody else. Versus, I just talked to somebody this last week who was feeling unseen and unheard by something that their partner was doing. And I said, when you feel that desire to pull away, that means the boundary is too low. And we need to heighten the boundary. A boundary is one of the ways we create healthy rupture and repair. So for example, in this case, if you've been talking to somebody and you feel hurt, you might need to take a break from talking to them and work on your own individual work. I know this becomes a question, and Taylor's done a lot of intake with couples that want to start with couples therapy, and they think, but the problem is the rupture and repair in our relationship. And Taylor, can you talk a little bit about why that's not the first rupture and repair we address?
You can start with couples therapy, but often the reason why people aren't ready is because a lot of rupture with ourselves has to do with past abuse or current abuse, addiction or infidelity. And when there is abuse, infidelity, or addiction, we don't look at contribution. Contribution is, you know, this is what I add to what's going on. This is what you add to what's going on. Because when there's infidelity, abuse, or addiction, contribution goes out the window. And so you can't look at contribution. And so you can't look at repair there first. We have to look at safety.
And even when couples do start to do couples work, sometimes what we find is that as the couple or the individual becomes healthier, that we unearth that the repair that needs to be done isn't actually in your relationship. It's in the relationship you had with your younger self. And that can be a really hard thing to see that my spouse is showing up better and they are being more self-aware. They're taking care of themselves in a better way. Oh, I'm starting to recognize that. That's my pain. That's my need. I'm not getting my needs met. And I'm expecting my spouse to need them versus working on meeting my own needs in healthy and other healthy ways.
How do we repair with someone that, or how do we do repair when someone has passed, or when there's divorce, or when someone is unsafe?
We don't. Just kidding. never again. Well, I think that's back to that thing I was saying about you need to do repair work for yourself, but then also within your relationship. Like, there shouldn't be just it's only repair work if I'm building a bridge between me and another person. Repair work also needs to be like, I need to repair, you know, the effects within myself. And so I think with what you're describing with that, like if someone has passed away, or if someone has moved and is no longer nearby, or if someone is, divorced, I think repair work still can and should be done in those situations. And the reasoning, you know, behind how you can do that would be, again, it's the boundary work is a big thing. I think that in and of itself is a huge thing to just say, like, you know, do I have the boundaries up, or not that it won't ever happen again, but I can easily identify where good protection is happening. I can validate my own, you know, knowledge of how to have a healthier interaction with people going forward instead of going into the same situation possibly. I also think there's a lot of work to be done where, especially when it's, there's, I think, a big distinction between someone choosing to leave and someone who has to leave without their choosing. Like, someone who passes away versus someone who has divorced, I think even within that, there's different ways to repair, right? So I think it just depends really on the scenario and back to basic needs. Like, what do I need out of this repair? What do I need out of this scenario? And if it's to find solace, I think that's one thing. But if it's to, I need to have what happened to me was wrong validated, I think that's another thing too. And so it's about looking less about, you know, maybe what actually happened at times, and looking more about what is it that I feel like I need from that scenario that happened.
One of the exercises that I like to do when it's really apparent that there's been a big rupture or a lot of ruptures that have never been repaired is actually to draw the cycle out. I will, I'll make sure we add a graphic to our Facebook post. I can do that when we do the episode, so you can go look at it. But one of the things we look at is we ask what has been ruptured. And there's often multiple things, right? And who has it been ruptured with? One of the people that I always make sure we add on there is self. How have I ruptured with self, right? Through this behavior or through my response or those kinds of things. How have I ruptured with my close attachments? How have I ruptured with my value system? How have I ruptured with, you know, my goals, those kinds of things. And then I go into accountability. What would accountability, and Haley, you talked about this a little bit, of acknowledgement, accountability, validation, what does that look like? And then repair goes into this reinvestment into the relationship of I'm starting to build trust again, and I'm moving into, okay, we're going to try and create healthy engagement and interaction and those kinds of things. And then we move back into what we call harmony, or kind of that stabilization of the relationship. And then it's normal to go through the cycle again and again in the hopes that ruptures and repair become less intense over time and more natural. But like I said, without rupture and repair, you can't have true intimacy and you can't have deep connection.
Are you talking, let me clarify that too. Are you talking about in general, you can't have deep intimacy after that in true connection? Or are you talking about in that relationship again?
I'm talking about, well, it doesn't have to be within that relationship. I mean, coming to know yourself and accepting that I do get hurt, and I hold myself and other people in a compassionate, accountable way. And I have boundaries that respect me and other people, allows you to go deeper and more personal. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important as we bring this up that that does not mean we need to rupture big, right? Some really unhealthy systems where there is emotional and physical and other types of abuse have huge ruptures, right? It's not like, oh, well, I'm going to attack you physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, whatever. And now that I've attacked you, we can go really deep and feel really close, right? That's an unhealthy cycle. So what I mean more is that I'm going to acknowledge your feelings and see you as a person.
Yeah.
And as you see yourself as a person, as they see you as a person, and understand and respect boundaries, you're going to feel that deeper connection and that level of intimacy, which is interesting because I think a lot of people think these fantasy relationships where we go into, and the stories, you know, they'll have, every story has a rupture, right? Whether it's a Disney fairy tale or, you know, the other end of the extreme with violence, they all have a rupture and repair process. That's what makes a good story. And so understanding that as we go through that and we see here's the problem, here's how it gets repaired, we grow into understanding with those people and we grow into deeper connection.
Mm-hmm. There's something interesting that happens as you begin to become healthier, as you begin to develop better boundaries, as you work on your trauma, people will lose their tolerance to be around unhealthy people. And it becomes this kind of conundrum of eventually you kind of don't have any relationships because no one's up to your standard. And so then you have to kind of renegotiate boundaries, not because you have to have unhealthy people in your life, but because you've now moved into this very black and white world of if you don't meet these incredibly high standards that are maybe unrealistic, then you don't have anyone that you can interact with. I'm not saying you should keep toxic people in your life, but there is this thing called concept creep where because something is now kind of in the general knowledge of the public, that people now take a word and then they begin to overuse it and use it where it doesn't apply. They start to say something is toxic when really, maybe it's not to the level of toxicity, or they start to say something as gaslighting when really it's just lying or deflecting. And so as we start to get healthier, we'll say, nope, that's toxic, instead of, no, that was a rupture. Mm-hmm. Now let's repair it and heal, and you can continue to be with other people. I'm friends with people whose political beliefs don't align with mine. I'm friends with people of other religions, and I'm not saying that just because you have a different political belief or a different religious belief means that you're unhealthy, by no means, but it's important to tolerate and be around people that think differently than you, because how can you learn something from someone that you agree with?
Yeah. I think it's important too with what we're describing, because the thing that keeps coming to my mind is what was said too. I'm going to kind of circle back to something that was said of if we have a rupture and we haven't repaired it, it's going to affect our other relationships. Because I can totally see a lot of people I work with and know personally saying like, oh, well, I can have a rupture in my life and have all my other relationships be great. Right. And I think the important concept that we want to focus on is we're not saying like all the other relationships are going to be pure crap going forward. Okay. We're not going to go to that extreme, but what we are going to say is that like there are protective mechanisms that are going to come out because we have those rupture type of relationships that haven't been resolved even within ourselves. Like we're saying, like, if we can't repair a relationship with someone else, we at least need to do a lot of that repair by ourselves. Right. So if we have that scenario, if we don't start taking care of that personally, we end up without even realizing it, creating this. It almost, for me, it almost feels like the pearl scenario. Like we know a pearl's created because a grit of sand goes into an oyster and they're trying to protect themselves. So they coat it, right? They coat that piece of sand. What they end up doing though, that the oyster doesn't quite realize, is that they coat it so much that all of a sudden it becomes this big issue. And so within ourselves, if we have this rupture and we don't work through it, what we end up recognizing for ourselves is that we start coding our relationships, or we start coding ourselves to try to protect ourselves, quote unquote. But what we end up doing is, without realizing it, creating an even bigger barrier between us and the potential of having true intimacy in a relationship, not just talking sexual, talking about any type of intimacy.
Yeah, it's funny that when people hear intimacy, they instantly think of sex.
Yeah, but then they don't want to talk about it. So it's always interesting.
So let me give an example. Okay, so, and I really love both of these things, because I think it's really important for us to recognize that there is the extreme abusive types of rupture, and how do we get out of those or repair means a boundary like divorce. And then there are these ruptures that we don't address well, and they become part of our personality. So I think about myself when I was a little kid. We talked a little bit about name calling. I had went through a lot of bullying and emotional rejection as a kid, and I deflected. And this is kind of what both Taylor and Haley are talking about. Like, I created this personality that was very bossy, knowledgeable, but in a controlling way, because I wanted to be valuable in some way. And so it was very off-putting to a lot of people. And I went through a period of my life where, although I was very skilled, I wasn't necessarily developing deep, close relationships. I could do really well at work. But then I was able to start to work on my personal just concept of self and learning to love myself and accept myself. And as I did that, I found that now, A, I don't have to prove myself. I don't feel the need to prove myself. That was the coding that had come up, and I've been able to shed that and just say, as I live my life well, then I can have the kind of healthy relationships I want. But I had brought those pains and triggers from childhood into multiple decades of my life. And I had to shed those in order to develop real healthy levels of closeness and intimacy in multiple realms of my life.
Something that helps us weather rupture really well and move into repair and healing well is having a healthy relationship either with ourself or with something other than ourself. So there are two kinds of attachment that everyone needs. It's either called self-validated or other-validated. And self-validated is really important. If you are self-validated, then you need to have something in your life every day to touch base with yourself, that you're human, that you have intricate worth. Or something that is, if you're other validated, it's important that you don't place your worth and your well-being in the hands of something changing. Or someone very changing, where rejection is a risk. And so for some people, that might be God, that might be a different higher power, that might be nature, that might be some kind of philosophy. And it's important to touch base with that every day. And doing this will increase self-worth and help heal wounds and help form identity well. And if we have a solid identity, we'll be able to weather these ruptures and move into repair much easier.
It also reminds me why sometimes when we are overly dependent on other, I can't remember the term now, Taylor, what did you call it?
Other validated.
When we're other validated and maybe we do have a supportive, healthy relationship, when we lose that relationship because of death or something like that, that we go, we might feel lost and alone, and we would have to recenter around either self-validated or a different higher power. Because I've seen that, especially with people as they age and lose loved ones or spouses, or even just parents. If their parents were their validation source, that might be something that when their parent passes away, they become very dysregulated because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think bottom line, when it comes to rupture and repair, a rupture is actually a good thing. It's something that can actually help you re-identify what you need. It can help a relationship recenter itself. A rupture does not have to necessarily be seen as always this awful scenario. Of course, do we want to try to avoid ruptures? Yeah, and it's okay to want to try to avoid a rupture. But a rupture, I think, in the end, is a really big teaching moment for ourselves, because when we pair it with the repair, when you pair the two of those together, it becomes a holistic type of way of being able to heal. And also it becomes a holistic way of being able to recenter yourself. And so I think when we talk about this idea of rupture pair, a lot of people say, well, tell me how I can avoid it. And our whole idea is you need to realize your life is all about ruptures and repairs. It happens every single day with a bunch of different interactions with people. Our job is not trying to, avoid going through those scenarios. Our job, in fact, is trying to just normalize the fact that it's going to happen, so that way when the big ones do happen, you know, to an extent, where to start that cycle with it. Oh, go ahead.
When I was going through my undergrad and I was working on campus, and one of the professors had an 18-year-old daughter, and he said, she just got rejected by, she had tried out for a college cheerleading organization. She had been rejected. And he said, she's never gone through this before. She's never been rejected. And I thought,
she probably didn't have any tolerance for it.
She didn't. And I think sometimes as parents or caregivers, we want people to never get rejected, but we need healthy rejection, because if we're not ever trying things that we're going to get rejected by, or people are, you know, that idea of snow plowing forests, they're creating this, you know, you won't fail, I won't let you fail mentality, then we won't ever build any kind of tolerance or strength. Strength comes from the breakdown. And that's true with our physical bodies, but it also is true with our relationships and our emotions. And so while we don't want to have big ruptures, you know, I've been married now, we're going into year 10, the ruptures that we have are not quite as frequent or as intense as they were when we were first married. But they still happen, probably. I'm sure I could list something that happens every day that's a little rupture, and then we repair and we get closer. Those bigger ruptures happen less often, and we talk about them and acknowledge them, and we move into into healthier repair each time, into closeness. And so I want to really encourage people that if you don't know how to rupture and repair, or you don't understand it, that's when you need to start working on acknowledging, what are my ruptures? What hurts? Where's the pain? And what would healing look like for me without requiring somebody else to do something, right?
And what I would say too is that if you're, so for me, I'm not in a marriage, but I have a lot of friendships that have lasted long periods of time and things like that. And what I've recognized with that is that certain of my friends, like, you have ruptures and repairs happening within friend groups all the time. One big thing I've recognized too is that there are some people I had been friends with or have been friends with who don't know how to handle a rupture repair. And with those people, for me, I don't look at that and say, well, now I'll never be able to repair it because they can't handle it. For me, that in itself almost helps me be able to do that personal repair work of my own, to recognize when the other person can't handle a rupture and can't handle a repair. And it makes it so that in the end, maybe I'm leaving that relationship different than where I had eventually, like I had started with it, but it shows that that, you know, I can not end the relationship, but leave that chapter of what it used to be because it couldn't handle the rupture of repair. And it's now in a different type of friendship or a different type of, you know, acquaintance, however I want to put that person. And it also helps me validate the ones who are able to rupture and repair in healthy ways and helps me be able to see the worth in that too. So you can see that within a relationship like, you know, a marriage, but you also see this a lot in friend groups. And so
friend groups, coworkers, extended family, bosses. And I love what bosses. And I think, Haley, what you just said is that if a relationship isn't working, it's about when it's about identifying what is the boundary, right? If I want to have this super close relationship with somebody who doesn't want to rupture and repair in a healthy way with me, then I need to grieve that and say, okay, then I'm going to need a higher boundary with this person. Maybe I see them less often, or we don't talk about certain things, yeah. You know, because they're not willing to do a healthy rupture and repair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and I think that that it brings in the end that repair that you as an individual need. So.
Yeah. And I love that because it really is applicable to every day. I think we said this, but I just want to be really aware, while we did say rupture and repair is healthy, intentional rupture is not. If I'm just going out there to hurt you to build intimacy, that, what's that term, Taylor?
Abusive?
Psychopath, abusive, what's the term?
I was going to say, let's just call it like it is.
It's just abuse, yeah.
Yeah, it's
so
yeah.
Not the just, that's...
It's just abusive.
I'm going to just be quiet.
No big deal. No, you're good. I think, no, that's, it is simply abusive. We want to often make it into this kind of more detailed thing, but... It is good to recognize too that that's one of the other extremes, and yeah. Something passive.
In religion, it's called planned prodigalism. So I'm going to go out, do harm, and then repair.
Yeah, eat, drink, and be merry. Might as well. Tomorrow we die. It's great.
One can hope.
And that. On that, and we'll work on repairing that. But I just really want to I want to make sure that we don't encourage people like. When I've been hurt, sometimes the intention because of somebody's trauma response is to push me away, right? So if somebody calls me a name, we'll go back to name calling. If somebody calls me a name in that moment, it will push me away. And sometimes it's done intentionally. I'll be really honest. I've had people call me a name and they know it bothers me. And I will just, instead of being offended by it, I will say, oh, you need me to move away from you right now. That's what you need.
I think that's different though, too, when the concept of rupture, what we're talking about, that's, you know, someone's protective barrier going up and they're not intentionally trying to rupture it so they can repair it in that kind of a scenario. I think they're just simply trying to.
It's that fight, freeze response that will rupture.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think some people also just get off on rupture. Like true. They enjoy getting a reaction out of people. And so they go about doing these little ruptures.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook @FateResilience. We would love to hear from you.